Welcome to Ballistic Radio, the fastest growing gun talk show in the country. Join us. We're going to explore the topics of firearms, self-defense, and your rights as a law-abiding citizen. Ballistic Radio, presented by Blackfire Ordnance Group, makers of TNT and TNT Black. Firearms finishes so tough, you need dynamite to take them off. Now, here's your host, John Johnston, on 55 KRC, the talk station.
Good evening and welcome to Ballistic Radio, presented by Blackfire Ordnance Group. I'm your host, John Johnston. Remember, you can always listen to past shows at ballisticradio.com and get the latest behind-the-scenes info at facebook.com/ballisticradio. We are about 200 or so likes away from 100,000, which is amazing and incredible. Thank you all so very much. I continue to be surprised that so many of you are listening, but I appreciate it. So anyway, co-hosting with me this evening, Mr. Andy Ulrich and Matt the Minion, who did not get stuck in the elevator on the way up to the studio.
I was stuck, but only for about a minute or so.
Didn't they have trouble with that elevator a while back?
I figured Matt wasn't smart enough to operate the elevator.
All the fancy buttons confused him.
Yeah, you know, more than...
Well, it went up to 3, but it didn't want to go anywhere else. Luckily, it did go back down to the lobby, but...
11 is the only number that matters.
Yeah.
Up to 11.
Yeah. Does it go to 11, Matt?
No.
Well, then, I don't want to talk about it. Anyway, so tonight's show is going to be interesting. We're going to talk about self-defense on a budget. I know a lot of people, especially online, seem to get hung up on what kind of gun people use and how nice that gun is and all sorts of other interesting things that probably don't actually matter that much. So we're going to get into that in a minute. Just a reminder, this segment brought to you by Colt. Colt, the legend continues. Knight's Armament Rifle is still running quite nicely, up to about 650 rounds on that, I want to say, with no issues at all. Once again, thank you to Freedom Munitions for providing the 5.56 ammunition for the test that we are doing, all 20,000 rounds of it, which I thought was awesome of them. They're actually doing a sale this weekend on their ammunition, 5% off and also $5 shipping. If you're looking for 9mm, I checked, I want to say yesterday, they had it for about $218 for a 1,000-round ship, which is about as good as you can get it anywhere. And that's actually new manufacturer ammo, too. That is not remanufactured stuff. So maybe go check them out and see what they have and if they can help you out with your ammunition needs. So, and free plug there. Hey. So
that's good ammo, man. It really is.
I actually am not going to lie. I bought some when I saw the sale. I'm like, ooh, I need to stock up just a little bit more, which I know sounds silly, but certain calibers I'm not all the way flush on. So anyway, we're going to get the Knights to about 1,000, maybe 1,500 rounds. Then, like I said last week, it's going to be going off to Cerakote to get coated, and that should be interesting. We're going to coat the bolt in TNT Black just to help increase its longevity, and also that'll be a nice test of the coating. So the FN pistol, we have not shot at all for the last 30-plus days now, just because we're actually doing an environment test on the coating of that as well. It's sitting somewhere that is generally not thought of as pleasant for firearms finishes. And we're going to be getting that back at some point in the next month or so, if I had to guess, and see how it did. And I'll post up a full write-up of that and photos and all sorts of interesting factoids about that. So, in addition, I wrote an article on the ballisticradio.com webpage, which seems to have resonated with a lot of people and then made a lot of people mad. Did you get a chance to read that?
I did read it.
What'd you think?
I think you were spot on. I mean, I agree.
I didn't pay you to say that either.
No,
did I?
No.
So, if you have not read the article, I'll kind of just sum it up into its two basic parts. Part one was that you really don't actually need any training to successfully use a gun in a defensive gun use. That's not to say that you shouldn't seek training, but there are all sorts of people that really just know not to point it at themselves and know that if they pull the trigger when it's loaded, it'll go bang, that do fine when they are forced to defend themselves. You hear stories about that all the time. They are not high-speed ninja secret squirrel types, and they, you know, in one capacity or another, they successfully defend themselves. Now, that's not to say that there aren't very small sets of circumstances where a little bit more training would be helpful. Specifically, you know, you look at some of the things like what happened out in Las Vegas, where just having a gun was not what saved the day. You know, at least not for the person that had it. And he was a hero, and I think that he prevented a lot of innocent people from being killed. But, you know, at the end of the day, what do we want to do? We want to go home. So, but for the most part, in most, and I hate to use the word typical because there's nothing typical about a shooting, but in most cases, just having the firearm is really the important thing to have. Now, the interesting observation that I made in the article that I sort of discussed with a lot of my peers in the training industry and just in the community itself is that the more training you end up getting, the less likely you are to ever need that training. And that's a hypothesis that I can't really test because there's no good way to do that. But in discussing it with a lot of people, it just seems to be something that makes sense. And
well, just think about this. Have you ever sat down, if you didn't absorb anything in that class, it may not do. If you're just there just to pull the trigger
yeah.
in a class, it's not, you're not going to absorb anything that they're teaching in a classroom, then it's probably not going to make any difference to you. But you actually think about things after you take training.
Well,
you think about it while you're in a restaurant.
Well, you should. And something else that I sort of get into in that article, at least, was the types of training that we get. And there is a lot of confusion as far as to what we're getting out of certain kinds of training. And that's not to say that I don't like high round count classes where you do a lot of shooting. I certainly do. But a lot of the most, I want to say, valid or relevant classes that I've taken have had zero to very small round counts.
300, 400, 500 rounds.
250.
Yeah, right.
Yeah. The most significant class I've ever taken was probably ECQC from Craig Douglas. And the round count in that class is 250 rounds. Mm-hmm. And you spend the other, you know, 2.5 days doing things that do not involve pulling a trigger on a real gun. But I think that my idea is that as you get more training, you start to notice things that maybe other people don't notice. You start to try very hard to avoid situations where you may be forced to defend yourself. You start to almost, I want to say, appear not as appetizing to the predators
yeah.
when they are out trying to figure out who it is exactly that they want to victimize.
They're not looking for the person who's looking at them.
Well, yeah.
Generally.
No, not at all. They like to, for the most part, attack from concealment or through some sort of ruse. I don't know. The article's worth a read, especially if you want to disagree with me, because then you can just post in the comments section. I always love that. And it was intriguing to me, though, because I want to say about 50,000 people have read it now. I was looking at the numbers the other day, and when I wrote it and posted it up, I did not expect nearly as many people to look at it as ended up doing so. And it's always sort of interesting to me to see what it is that people respond to and what it is that, I guess, speaks to them. Anyway, we'll actually get to the meat of the show with self-defense on a budget when we get back. Right now, you are listening to Ballistic Radio. Welcome back to Ballistic Radio, presented by Blackfire Ordnance Group, makers of TNT and TNT Black. Firearms finishes so tough you'd need dynamite to take them off. Visit them online at blackfireordgroup.com. And Eric was, I guess he was confused in there because you sort of let that music run a little bit before you turned my mic on, didn't you? Shaking your head, yes. You don't want to tell all the listeners it was your fault? Okay. Anyway, this segment brought to you by Walther. Walther and the new PPX. So let's get into self-defense on a budget. When people think about self-defense, I guess we need to really break this down into two categories. Self-defense in the home, and then self-defense out in public. which can be accomplished all sorts of ways. But since this is a gun-oriented talk radio show, we will talk about the gun as a defensive tool. So I think I'm going to start with self-defense in the home, though, just because it's a little bit easier and it's honestly cheaper. And I know that's...
Yeah. Oh, definitely.
Yeah, it's kind of bad that this is going to be... I mean, I know the whole point of the show is to talk about the dollars and cents of it, but really everyone deserves the ability to successfully defend themselves if they need to. But let's talk about that just a little bit. A lot of people for self-defense in the home get told all sorts of interesting things when they walk into their local gun store. Andy, what's your favorite one that you hear?
Well, get yourself a shotgun.
Oh, because the sound of the shell
being... of the shotgun will make the perpetrator...
run away.
...defecate in his pants and run away.
Yeah. Well, first of all, let's address that. That's not a thing. I'm not saying that that's not happened before, because I'm sure it has somewhere. But if your plan is to rack a shell into the chamber of your pump-action shotgun and expect the bad guy to leave... you might want to rethink that a little bit. Generally, the type of people that will break into an occupied structure have thought about it, have done it a lot, have probably had guns pointed at them, have mm-hmm. had guns shot at them, have maybe shot guns at other people. It's not as big of a deal to them as it is to you.
Or they're on something they would never hear it anyhow.
Yeah,
they're
exactly.
Oblivious. They're just they're goal oriented is to yeah. get something to sell.
Yeah, exactly. So the thing that I think the first step there, and this is sort of any self-defense at all, is to really come to grips with the fact that you may or may not need to use deadly force against someone. So, pump-action shotgun is not necessarily a bad choice. They can be had cheaply. There are some shotguns that are functional, pump-action shotguns that are functional in the $200 range, high $200 range.
Oh, yeah.
And that would be something that's incredibly valid. You know, something else to think about with the shotgun, though, is whether or not all the people in the household are going to be able to use it. You know, a 12 and even a 20-gauge shotgun are not easy to operate. The pump-action shotgun requires a manual of arms that is incredibly difficult to manipulate well under stress. And I know a lot of people are going to be looking at their radios going, huh? But having run a pump-action shotgun before, it's kind of funny to short-stroke a shell because you didn't quite right. pump it as hard as you needed to, and you cause a malfunction, and then you have to deal with that. And that's coming from someone that I shoot a lot. I'm familiar with the platform, and it's still something that's easy to do. Now, obviously, that's a training issue, but we're going to assume that if you're on the self-defense with a budget kick, you probably don't have the money to maybe attend as many training classes as you would otherwise. So you need to think about whether or not you're going to be able to effectively use that weapon if you need to fire more than one shot. The other thing, too, is that if there's anyone in the house that is physically less capable than you, small women and or elderly people or someone with disabilities or adolescent children that are responsible enough to be trusted with a firearm, you know, if you're the shooter in the house and you're a big guy, something you need to consider is that chances are you're not the one that has to use that firearm. So 12-gauge shotgun, you can find those, like I said, mid-high $200 range. As much as I hate to suggest it, if you are dead set on a shotgun, I would seriously consider the good old coach gun, the double barrel, Western style cowboy shotgun, as made famous by Joe Biden, who I never thought I would mention on this show.
Yeah, but he's thinking about a 28 inch.
Yeah, that's true.
There, Parker.
Yeah, not quite. Now, those are something else that can be had pretty cheaply. The thing that I will give them is that for those first two rounds, they are very easy to operate. And honestly, reloading them is not necessarily difficult if you practice it with dummy rounds. Even a little bit. You know, the drawbacks to that are, once again, for recoil-sensitive individuals, not a good choice. Also, too, if you need to fire more than two rounds, which is very, very likely in the event of someone actually coming into your house and needs shot, you know, oddly enough, despite what media and the movies would have you think, it's pretty easy to miss with a shotgun. If you need more than two rounds, trying to reload a double-barrel shotgun in the middle of a gunfight is probably not the thing that you want to be doing. So where else does that take us? I'm a fan of AR pattern rifles for in the home. The problem with that is that the cheapest AR pattern rifle you are going to find are in the $500 range, and that's generally without any sort of sighting system, and that's no bueno at all. Obviously, if you get a rifle, it needs to have sights on it. So I'm going to discount those for right now. You've got some AK pattern rifles that can be had for the, you know, in the $300 range, high $300 range, low $400 range. Once again, you're starting to get up into a budget area where there are maybe some better choices. Not only that, but also the 7.62 by 39 round, which is what most AK pattern rifles are going to fire, is not what I would consider to be a good idea for inside of the home. Now, I know you're going to say, well, wait, you just suggested a 5.56 pattern rifle for an AR pattern rifle chambered in 5.56 for inside the house. What's the difference for both rifles? 5.56, when tested, has consistently been shown to penetrate less interior structures than either service caliber handgun rounds or service caliber shotgun rounds. Mainly because of the lightweight nature of the 5.56 round. You've got, you know, a bullet that's 55 grains that's moving relatively fast compared to other rounds that tends to break up when it hits something into much smaller pieces that then do not have the mass to go on and do as much damage as something else would. One of the things that the AK is known for, on the other hand, is being able to penetrate intermediate barriers with relative ease. That's one of the advantages that people often cite when they start talking about them. So, once again, maybe not the best thing to look for inside your home. So, centerfire rifles, you know, once again, not something that that I would suggest. You can get into pistol caliber carbines. You can get into lever action rifles. And, you know, those are certainly something to consider. I never thought that I would suggest a High Point for anything in my entire life, but I will say this. They make a carbine that's low $200 range, I want to say.
A hair more than that, but still it's...
I've seen a couple of them now that have ran surprisingly well. Mm-hmm. It's not necessarily something that I would go take a training class with, but it is something that I would... be very, you know, if it's all I had, I'd be comfortable if that's what I had in my house. Right. Once again, not the best option ever, but it is something to consider. I do not think their handguns are suitable for anything more than holding down papers on your desk. And that sort of goes for all the other brands of that ilk, sort of like the Cobras and the Jennings and and all those. Not a good thing to be relying on. Something else to think about since we're still on rifles would be a 22 caliber rifle for self-defense is actually a very valid choice for a couple of different reasons. You can get a Ruger 10/22 for around $219. It's one of their no-frills models, but it's got sights, comes with a magazine. You know, generally a 25-round magazine, sometimes a 10-round magazine, either way. And depending on what state you live and your local gun stores and all that. The 22 caliber rifle, and specifically the 22 caliber long rifle, is a rimfire cartridge. I don't like those for self-defense for a couple of different reasons, but I will tell you why I'm suggesting them here. Generally, the ignition of a rimfire cartridge is questionable. Depending on how they've loaded the ammunition, you can get a high number of rounds that just don't go off, which is a bad thing. Certain manufacturers' 22s don't work that well. That's kind of why I'm specifically talking about the Ruger 10/22, because I know they work and I know they're cheap. And it sort of goes back to the having a gun thing. You know, if you've got a rimfire rifle that's got 25 rounds in it, is pretty much, for all intents and purposes, zero recoil, so anybody in the house can use it. it's easy to make hits with it. And the other thing, too, is ammunition, though it is still difficult to find and more expensive than it used to be, is much, much cheaper than anything else out there. And then you get to actually practice with your home defense weapon, which I cannot recommend enough. I mean, you know, even though I said at the beginning of the show, a lot of times just having the gun is what you really need. I'm not saying that you shouldn't go practice if you're able to. You really should. And that's one of the reasons why I like the .22 caliber in a very specific set of circumstances. You can actually go back to the ballisticradio.com webpage, and I did an interview with Dr. Sherman House about .22 calibers for self-defense. It's an entire show where you can sort of hear all the thoughts on it. And it's certainly worth a listen if you're trying to figure out what you want for inside the home. So that's going to bring us right into the handguns for home defense, which will also segue very nicely into the handguns for concealed and open carry. And yes, open carry. I will talk about that too, because there is actually a place for that, which we are going to talk about probably in the next segment. One thing that I will leave everybody with before the break, and then, you know, we'll come back to it. If you're buying a handgun for self-defense and you go to the gun store and you're looking for cheap, and most of the handguns that can be had for what I consider to be an affordable price for someone that's on a budget range anywhere from around $260 up to around $350. I'd say that's about the sweet spot of cheap guns. And I hate to use the word cheap.
Inexpensive is probably what you're looking for.
Yeah, inexpensive. There are certain brands that fall in that range that you want to avoid, and there are certain brands that are cheaper than that that you absolutely want to avoid. Like I said, High Point, not something that I would recommend, and I will get into why I don't recommend those in a little bit. You know, all the other ones, but I think something that a lot of people overlook is police trade-in firearms and used guns, and where you can find those online to get sent to an FFL near you is something that is maybe good to research. But like I said, we'll get into that in the next segment. Right now, you're listening to Ballistic Radio. Welcome back to Ballistic Radio, presented by Black Fire Ordnance Group, makers of firearms finishes so tough you'd need dynamite to take them off. Visit them online at blackfireordgroup.com. This segment brought to you by TopGunSupply.com. TopGunSupply.com is your web source for fine firearms parts and accessories. True product specialists committed to delivering the highest level of customer support to you. They carry top name brands including Ed Brown, Wilson Combat, Les Bear, Sig Sauer, and many more, as well as premium AR pattern rifles. Whether you are looking to protect yourself, are a first-time gun buyer, or a competitive shooter, TopGunSupply.com can satisfy your firearms needs. TopGunSupply.com, your premier source for SIG parts and accessories. So, we will take some calls this show, too. I meant to bring that up a little bit earlier. If you have any questions, you can get a hold of us at 1-800-823-8255. Or if you're local, 749-5500. Try and get to your calls at the end of the show, assuming that we have a chance to and we've covered what we want to cover, and also with what you want to talk about is what we want to talk about. So anyway, moving forward, I had mentioned before the break used firearms and police, specifically police trade-in firearms, and finding out where you can pick those up is a lot easier than people think. I did a quick Google search earlier today and just typed in police trade-in guns and had four or five different websites come up that were selling all sorts of interesting things. So I was saying earlier in the show how, in my mind, if I'm thinking of an affordable handgun or affordable gun at all, $250 to $350 range. Mm-hmm. Oddly enough, there are quite a few police trade-in Glocks for right around $340.
And that's a deal. That really is a very reliable platform.
Yeah, oh, yeah. And, you know, I know a lot of people are going to say, well, you know, I don't want to buy something used, or I'm sure they're beat up and all that. Well, A, I don't really care what my gun looks like. Mm-hmm. B, I know that a lot of people think cops shoot a whole bunch. That is sadly not true at most departments, unless, you know, the police officer is going on their own time, spending their own money. It's just, it's generally, a lot of places, they do the state minimum, which I want to say in Ohio is like 25 rounds every 6 months.
Right, and they just changed that here.
Yeah, that's, so generally, if you're buying a police trade handgun, you're buying a gun that's probably not been shot that much.
It's carry wear. It's not really shooting wear.
Which, hey, whatever.
And you're talking about a gun that's good for 100,000 rounds or better. I mean,
yeah, something like that.
You know, well, shoot it.
Too, yeah. And if you're worried about just how your gun looks, then you're obviously not purchasing it for the right reason.
Right.
Well, I won't even go that far, but if we're talking about self-defense on a budget and you're worried what your gun looks like, then yes, you're not purchasing it for the right reason. I'm not going to lie. There's guns that I bought because they were pretty. But once again, I wasn't buying those on a budget. I was buying
them. You intended on keeping them pretty. And
yeah. Well, no. I intended on ruining them, but I liked how they looked, and that's... You know, I have this nasty tendency to buy really nice guns and then use them for their intended purpose. But
I really don't have any really nice guns, though. Mm. I don't. I have guns that are tools.
Yeah. Well, they're all tools to me. Yeah. So, anyway, moving forward, going back to this. So police trade-in guns are something you really want to give strong consideration to. Like I said, do a Google search. I know there's been all sorts of talk about buying a gun on the internet and, you know, doing that without a background check. When people say that, they have no freaking clue what they're talking about at all, period, and it makes me want to claw my own eyes out. If you purchase a firearm online through a website like GunBroker or TopGunSupply.com, here's what happens. They ask you for the FFL license, which is a federal firearms license, of a dealer near you where you would like the gun to be shipped. That gun is going to be shipped to said dealer, at which point you will go in to pick up your gun and have to fill out a 4473 form, just like you would have to if you walked into the store and wanted to buy one of the guns they already had. A lot of places will charge you a transfer fee, some more than others. Locally in Cincinnati, Kyle's Gun Shop has got about the best deal on transfer fees. I want to say there's still only $20, which is... Yeah. You know, a really good deal. That's generally the price you get if you know a buddy that's an FFL out of his house. And you're still, even then, doing the background check. But if you're not fortunate enough to know one of those people that's running a small operation, you know, go to Kyle's. Generally, what you're paying for if you buy a gun online is going to be the firearm itself and then shipping, sometimes not, and maybe a credit card fee if you decide to use a credit card instead of a check or a money order. Sometimes not. Depends where you buy it from. But anyway, you can look online for a cheap gun that is probably a little bit more well-built than other new firearms in the same price range. If we're talking new firearms, something that a lot of people are going to look at and are what I consider to be the bare minimum of reliability, maybe, would be something like a Kel-Tec or a Taurus, which would not be my first choices. Honestly, inexpensive guns, I think Ruger is a really excellent option. Mm-hmm. They've copied both of Kel-Tec's most popular designs in the LCP and then also in the LC9. They're essentially Kel-Tecs if they were made nicer. So that, and they've got Ruger's warranty. Not that Kel-Tec has a bad warranty, but I've always had a little bit easier time dealing with Ruger if something goes wrong with a gun. And I tend to just trust those a little bit more. And they're about generally $20 more expensive than the Kel-Tec counterpart.
Right.
High Point and things like that. A lot of the sub-$250 guns are just not going to work. You're really rolling the dice as to whether or not they're going to fire more than one or two shots before they have a malfunction. Now, if you're on an honest-to-God budget where you cannot afford anything else, then once again, having a gun, better than not having a gun. But a lot of the people that I meet do things that, if they really thought about them, were maybe not as important. For instance, you know, $5 coffees every other day, pack of cigarettes every day. There's things in your life that you can probably cut back on to save enough money to buy something that is going to be a quality item and work for you for many, many years.
Maybe drop that prepaid all-inclusive data plan phone for 2 months, yeah. 3 months.
Once again, yeah, it depends on what's important to you. And I'd like to think that if you've listened to the show for the last half hour, then you're obviously interested in this. There are ways to play with the budget temporarily so that you can buy something that's going to work. So we've covered inside the house kind of, and I know I'm not really getting into too much detail here, and I'm sorry for that, but this is really just to give idea a starting place so they can go and do their own research. Let's talk about carrying the gun outside of the home. You've got two options there. One of them would be getting your concealed carry permit, and then the other one would be taking advantage of Ohio's open carry laws. Mm-hmm. I will talk about open carry in Ohio just briefly. And open carry is one of those things that I almost hate to talk about at all because of all the things that have been going on lately. But
it's almost as bad as caliber wars, too.
Well, here's what I think open carry. And let me be 100% clear. I think open carry should be 100% legal in every state of the union. It should be, you know, handgun, long gun with no restrictions. That's fine. I'm 100% for the Second Amendment being what it should be, which is not infringed. That having been said, I think open carry activism has really hurt a lot of the Second Amendment movement and given people the wrong idea, or at least given people the... Did I just say idea?
Idea.
I sure did. Wow. has given people the wrong idea and a lot of the anti-gun people a lot of ammunition to twist things around in a way that is inconvenient. Here's what open carry is great for. If you don't have the money to go get a concealed carry permit, mm-hmm. and it costs money, and it shouldn't, but it does, well then open carry is your only option. If you're going to open carry a firearm in the state of Ohio, it needs to be visible. It can be loaded. You need to not take it in your car loaded. And loaded is, even if you've got the magazine removed, no bullet in the chamber, if you've got that in your car and you don't have a concealed carry permit, you're breaking the law.
No, they just changed that now.
Did they?
You can have the magazine separated from the gun, and you can have a speed loader for a revolver with the gun, and it's not considered a loaded gun in Ohio now.
I thought that was only
They just changed this last session.
But still...
kind of a useless way to carry a gun.
Well, it's better than nothing. And that's why I have you around, Andy, is because you correct my mistakes when I make them, which is so very rare, right?
Yeah. There's been a few other things changed, too, but that was significant in Ohio.
Yeah.
That was.
Well, and it's something, once again, this is not my area of expertise just because it's not something I usually think about that much, but the way the concealed carry laws are set up most places, it really puts an unfair burden on people that are financially challenged, which, you know, could be a whole nother show, and sort of I'll get into that in the next segment since we have to go to break, but is really the main reason why I hate mandatory training to get a concealed carry permit.
Constitutional carry.
Yes, maybe one day. Anyway, right now you're listening to Ballistic Radio. Welcome back to Ballistic Radio, brought to you by Blackfire Ordnance Group, makers of TNT and TNT Black Firearms finishes so tough you'd need dynamite to take them off. Visit them online at blackfireordgroup.com. This segment brought to you by the Polypalooza 2 Memorial Training Conference. Join some of the top trainers in the country August 16th and 17th at the Raven Concealment Systems facility in Northern Ohio, where they will be teaching some of the most vital self-defense skills that every armed citizen should know. Lesson blocks will cover a myriad of topics suitable for shooters and students of all skill levels. It's a great first class to go to. For more information, click the Polypalooza 2 tab on ballisticradio.com. Registration is only $250, and all the money is going to benefit the Paul Gomez Children's Trust. Remember, click the Polypalooza 2 tab on the ballisticradio.com homepage for more information, and save the date August 16th and 17th. Whew. Anyway, see, it was funny. My computer froze up, and I was staring at a blank screen for just a minute when the bumper music came on. I'm like, I wonder how well I remember that. then it came up. We've got Bill in Evanston on line one with a concealed carry question. I will get to you in just a second, Bill. Something that I want to get back to. So open carry, if you do not have a concealed carry permit, is about the only way you're going to be able to carry a gun legally outside of your home. Now, if you want to go get a concealed carry permit, and this is my big problem with this, because if you're on a budget, the cheapest way I can really see for you to get a concealed carry permit and carry a gun is going to be around $500 or $600.
Right.
Probably more than that.
You're going to have a class.
You're going to have a class. And the cheapest ones I see are about $75, maybe $100. It depends where
generally.
They're at. Yeah.
Every once in a while, someone will do a $50, but it's pretty rare.
And not only that, but the quality of instruction you're getting.
Right.
So, and once again, the class that you take to get your concealed carry permit is a firearm safety class that briefly discusses the concealed carry laws. Doesn't really carry any use of force laws at all, or not in depth. It's not a very inclusive class. So anyway, you've got to take that class, and then you get to go to your local sheriff's office and pay them, what was it, $67 if you've been a resident of the state for 5 years, okay. Or $91 if you've not lived in Ohio for more than 5 years. So right off the bat, to get your concealed carry permit, you're looking at somewhere between $150 to $200, let's say.
Yeah.
Then you've got your gun. Then you've got your holster, because really if you're carrying one, even in your pocket, it needs to be in a holster. Not by law. It just needs to be so you don't get something snagged in the trigger guard and put a hole in yourself on accident.
Well, I want to say here too, John, also, I know you can kind of explain the situation a little better, but they do also offer a temporary emergency license.
Right.
And that's only $37 for, you know, situations.
Yeah, the thing with that is that they only last for so long, and you are still required to go and take the class and get your permit. And I don't even know that they put that $37 you spend for the temporary permit towards the actual permit itself.
I think that's a one-time payment there, and then mm-hmm. you have to go through the whole...
Yes.
You have to pay the $67 when you need to get your full-blown license.
Yeah, so. Pretty much. And that... I hear a lot of people talk about mandatory training, and I absolutely hate it because it is really not fair to people that are on a tight, tight budget or are disenfranchised for whatever reason. Mm-hmm. You should not have to pay money to exercise your constitutional rights. You shouldn't.
Just to cover it with a T-shirt, just to cover it with a shirt.
Yeah, pretty much.
Purse.
You know, or carry it loaded in your car. Anyway, right. I'll get off of that. Concealed carry is not cheap, and that's just something you sort of have to live with right now. There are ways to do it if you are on a budget, but it's not ideal. So that's kind of where we're at. Let's take Bill's question real quick. Bill, how are you doing this evening?
Okay. Did you say you can carry a weapon if you don't have concealed carry?
You can open carry a firearm in the state of Ohio, loaded, as long as it is plainly visible to everyone, specifically police officers. The thing with that you have to think about is, from a tactical standpoint, you have let everyone know that you have a gun. And I know that a lot of people will argue that, well, if they see the gun, then they're not going to be likely to attack me. I don't agree with that, because if that were the case, you would not see as many uniformed police officers get as attacked as often as they do. The other thing, too, is that whether or not it's right, and it's really not right, but not everyone knows that open carry is legal, and you are going to probably draw attention that you may or may not want to deal with. I'm not saying that as, you know, a reason to discourage people from doing it, but it's something that you really need to be aware of before you sort of take that into consideration. The other thing that I'll say is that for me personally, if I'm open carrying a firearm and I haven't done it in years, the type of holster that you really need to use, a retention holster, something that will actively retain the gun if someone were to try and take it from you.
Yes.
Those are generally not cheap. Those are usually $50 to $90 holsters, mm-hmm. depending on which one you go with. I know that I see a lot of people carrying guns openly in nylon holsters with like a thumb break that you can buy at Walmart for about $10, $15, $20.
Okay.
I honestly think that's borderline irresponsible. You know, I like seeing people exercise their Second Amendment rights. I completely support their right to do it, but I think that it is not taking into account everything that needs to be taken into account if you're going to do that.
Oh, okay.
But yeah, I mean, there are ways that you can carry a gun out in public without a concealed carry permit. Something else to think about, though, too, is that as soon as you get inside your vehicle, if you've got that gun still loaded, the car counts as concealment.
Right.
And you are now breaking the law unless you've unloaded the gun.
Oh, okay.
So,
and that gun in the car has to fall under it. The other precepts are in a closed box with a closing mechanism, snap, zipper,
right.
Something. So
it's not going to be easily accessible. Well,
what about the glove box?
Well, they're talking more about like a firearms case,
right? Right.
Okay. Like a zippered container.
Okay.
Glove box would be questionable.
Do you want to be reaching into your glove box for Mr. Police Officer
without
a concealed carry handgun license?
And the first thing that he knows that you have a gun is seeing your hand go towards it. Right. I know there's a lot of arguments that you could make. Well, I would tell him about it beforehand. It's setting up a recipe for disaster that, you know, is best avoided. So
just put it in the trunk.
Yeah. Well, and the problem then is it doesn't do you much good in the trunk. You
right.
know? So it's a sad thing, but
it's still though. If you can't afford that concealed carry class, and this is the only way you can
it's
have
better
a weapon,
than nothing.
Yeah, it's better to have it part of the time than not all of the time.
Okay.
Yeah, but it's you know, it's something that, like I said, you really want to think about all of the variables involved. And I my concern is that some of the people that do it don't always seem to consider every aspect of it. If that makes sense.
So if you're walking to the store at night, you could take and have your weapon
on your hip. Yeah,
on your hip.
You could. You know, once again, it sure beats not having one. But there's all sorts of things to think about if you're going to do that. So,
okay.
Hopefully, I answered your question, Bill. I'm going to try and get to one of the other callers' questions.
Okay, thank you.
So, you have a good evening, sir. All right, we've got Matt on line 2 from Norwood. Matt, how are you doing this evening?
I'm doing good, and you?
Not too bad. We got a couple minutes left before the end of the show. What can I help you with tonight?
Okay, I just have a two-part question, and I'll take my answer off the air.
Sure.
Just earlier, I heard you talking about home defense.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I know a lot of there's some people that aren't good under pressure, and a gun with just thought of a gun with a lot of safety features could sound like a hassle if someone's breaking in your house. Would you recommend something like a Ruger LCP with a no safety features or something like 1911 with a lot of them?
Well,
and the second question was the classes that you recommend. I know you put a lot of emphasis on practice.
Mm-hmm.
Do they is there any classes that mentally prepare people that aren't good under pressure? And I'll take my answer off the air for
cool.
you.
Cool. I appreciate it.
Okay, thank you.
Yep. So to answer the first part of that question in the next minute, a gun with a safety, a gun without a safety, I will generally say that if you're relying on the safety to prevent you from having an accident, you're probably going to have an accident.
Mm-hmm.
I know 1911s are considered very safe because they've got at least 2 active mechanical safeties. Oddly enough, most of the close calls I've ever been involved with or that my friends have been involved with have involved 1911s. Go figure.
Yeah.
So that's going to be a personal preference thing. As far as classes that prepare you mentally for stress, yeah, there are quite a bit. The problem is not many of them are around here. But if you're looking for an excellent class, if you were to look up ShivWorks, ShivWorks, that is run by a gentleman named Craig Douglas. His ECQC class is probably the most eye-opening experience I've ever had. A lot of it is force on force and problem solving under pressure. Generally, what you want to look for, though, is not a pure shooting class, something that has you making decisions under stress, getting you used to making those decisions quickly. You know, that's just kind of where we're at. So anyway, next week, we will be talking a little bit more about getting started with concealed carry and maybe some things that you need to think about if you've not thought about them. And also some of my favorite concealed carry gear, some of Andy's favorite concealed carry gear, mats, and all that. Anyway, make sure you check out our website, ballisticradio.com. Like our Facebook page at facebook.com/ballisticradio. Thanks for listening, everyone. As always, be safe and see you next Sunday at 7 p.m.